Why was I kicked out of the Super Bowl? I mean, I didn't have a ticket, but don't they know who I am? Don't they know how I over?
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Report podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. I was not kicked out of the Super Bowl. Joining me is two other people who were not kicked out of the Super Bowl, and then one puppet that was apparently. But let me start. Let's start with John Salica. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I'm also a guy that didn't watch the Super Bowl for whatever it's worth last night.
Did not watch it. All right, Joby with us as well. Joby, you watched the game?
Yeah, I'm not a bitter Bengals fan like our friend Mr. Salica. Yeah.
And another, also joining us, someone who missed the Super Bowl for other reasons, legal, more so than wanting to not wanting to watch it, David Griggs. David, how are you?
Well, I would have liked to have. I've been better.
What exactly happened here? Why did you get thrown out?
Well, I went to the game, and then they wouldn't let me in. And I said, well, don't you recognize me? Don't you know who I am? I'm David Griggs from Hoops HD.
The number one rated puppet on the internet, correct?
Oh, yeah, the number one rated basketball puppet on the internet. And maybe I was shouting, maybe I was drunk, and I don't know. They said, you can't come in or get out of here or get off the chair, get off the bed.
You should have told them you were part of the halftime show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you and Beyonce would have been something special, I think. But on that note, though, we do want to get into the college basketball as opposed to NFL football. And tonight we've got a lot to get to, but we're going to start where I think everybody's been starting recently. The biggest news, obviously, in college basketball this week was Louisville self-imposing a postseason ban due to the stripper scandal that's been going on, basically coming out and saying, hey, we really have no defense here. We really think that these violations did occur. Therefore, instead of waiting for the NCAA to punish us, instead of them waiting the NCAA to even conclude its investigation, we're just going to take this year off and knock this team out of the postseason this year. Damian Lee and Trey Lewis, a pair of graduate transfers in their final year of eligibility, transferred to Louisville for the sole purpose of having one last year in college basketball where they can make the NCAA tournament. Completely screwed over by this. David, let me start with you. What are your thoughts on what Louisville did?
Well, I thought it was really selfish, and I judging by everyone that's reacted to this, I think everybody sees it for what it is. Louisville hired Chuck Smart, who used to work at the NCAA as an investigator and now does consulting. I don't know exactly what role he played on this, but as far as selfishly, this is the best thing they can do. As an athletic department, they're back to normal in April. They enter next basketball season with the same team and roster and coaches and everything about it exactly as they would have anyway. They get the band behind them. There's no long-term effects. They don't lose any recruits. Players don't transfer. It's the quickest way to get back to normal. But it is selfish, and they are crapping on this year's team, particularly on Lewis and Lee. And I just don't think they care. They acted selfishly because they wanted to get back to normal as soon as possible. They were advised, probably correctly, that it was going to be a one-year ban. It wasn't going to be any more than that. And the best thing to do as far as long-term is to take it now. I don't like it. I don't think they did right by their players. Lewis and Lee is the one everybody's talking about, but really it's everyone that gets screwed. You only get four seasons. This is 25% of their college experience, and they can't play in the tournament. I think Hawaii did it much better. I think that they did right by their players. You know, when something happens in the middle of the year, I think you owe it to your current roster to wait until the off season so they get to experience the tournament and this season, and those that are wanting the transfer will have that opportunity, and those that want to stay will have that opportunity. To me, the sum of it is Louisville just doesn't care about their players.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Hawaii, also Alabama A&M, although it's an APR issue, not a not a sanctions issue. Both these schools could have taken the penalty this year, took the NCAA penalty of saying we'll do it next season, therefore giving the kids a chance to transfer out if it's going to be their last year and they really have that goal of playing the NCAA. Giving recruits a chance to rethink where they want to go, possibly, but not screwing over this year's team. Right. And Joby, let me get your thoughts on this. I mean, is that really all this was just let's screw this year's team, let's, you know.
I think it was – I'm wondering how many whispers, given the relationship of the self-investigation, I wonder how many whispers the NCAA said, you better do it now. Yeah, where if you try to play it off, we might try to extend this a little bit more than a year. You better cut your losses now. I don't know.
I don't know, Joby, but given that the NCAA with teams like Hawaii and Alabama A&M said, we'll do it next year.
Exactly. And so that's the only – you know, I'm completely guessing here. I'm very much where David is on – I think this is a bad move and a bad signal to other players that, hey, we're just going to look out for ourselves. I very much agree. I'm just wondering – if there were whispers, because, you know, it's one thing to be talking about payoffs, and it's another thing to be talking about APR issues. This hit like a special nerve, I am sure, at NCAA headquarters. Now, that being said, I still am beyond offended by our friend Dan Dockich. Oh, my God. You can't go after the players like that. I hope to God he is apologizing for the next 5 years over this.
Wait a minute, what?
Lose a year of eligibility in my mind from the airwaves.
What did he say?
I'm sorry. He said karma. Essentially, karma's a bitch in referring to Lewis and Lee. Because after all, they left Cleveland State and Drexel in a lurch. As graduate transfers.
We'll get this in a second. This is the same Dan Dockich that said on TV this week that Indiana is the best team in the Big Ten. But we'll get in a bit here. But John, this has become the thing here with all these programs. Whenever somebody does something wrong, we're going to throw a postseason ban, or even more so, we're going to self-impose a postseason ban right now to avoid future penalties. And Is the postseason ban, in your opinion, really the way to deal with penalties? I mean, should we really be out there, in general, even when the NCAA is handing it down, penalizing the kids that are in schools today for something that happened by coaches that pre-existed them and players that pre-existed them? How is that fair?
There's a big difference between this ban and the bans that Syracuse laid out this year, as well as Missouri and Cal State Northridge. Louisville actually had a chance to do some damage. For as much as we've been clowning them on this show, they were going to be a surefire NCAA tournament team, probably going to win one game, maybe two. You talk about pressure from the NCAA for Louisville to step down this year. I'm sure there had to be some pressure on Louisville from the ACC as well to stay in the tournament and also stay eligible so they wouldn't have to forfeit a game for the ACC tournament. So there's a parallel to some of the, TV blackouts they had in the early to mid-90s that were also sanctions, where it was meant to punish, let's say, Maryland in the early 90s. It also had the effect of knocking Duke and North Carolina off the airwaves for a game, and I was not supposed to punish them. I think what I'm saying here is if Louisville is not in the NCAA tournament, everyone in the ACC is going to be missing out on whatever tournament units the Cardinals bring to the table.
And that's a good point, because obviously there's no guarantee that another ACC team takes their spot. And it's, you know, I mean, it could happen, but most likely not. But Joby, let me ask you the same question though. I mean, is there some other way we could deal with these punishments instead of telling teams not to compete in taking these postseason bans?
The only other way, and I don't know if it's the correct way, is to go directly to the coaches and put in coaching bans on the coaches involved. If Pitino knew, his job's gone. Yeah, those are ones that have been thrown out. Unfortunately, the postseason ban is the most effective, I think, right now for a school, and it's not fair. You're right. It's not fair to the existing players. That's why this mid-year thing really stinks, because you're not giving them any ability to transfer out. You should allow players to transfer out, you know, the Hawaii players without penalty, you know, without even sitting out a year in a particular case, and, you know, waive those rules. The postseason ban's the best way to do it, because it, at the end of the day, a postseason ban, while it does affect the dozen players on the team most directly, it does also hit the heart of the fan base and the athletic department and the boosters, which more often than not, Louisville's in a unique case, more often than not, are the source of the problem.
Well, okay, here's my thing about that. It isn't hitting Louisville. In 2 months, the tournament will be over. They'll be on the baseball. They'll be back to normal. They're going to start essentially for the month of April for Louisville is going to be exactly the way it was with or without the ban. I'm not for eliminating the postseason ban. I'm for eliminating it within the same athletic year. So anywhere, anything that happens after July 1st, you don't get the ban until next year. That means everybody on the team gets to play this season. That means everybody on the team gets to transfer at the end of the year without penalty if they choose to, and that means everybody that's committed to you has the option of getting out of it if they choose to. You want to hurt the school and not the players, that's the way to do it. I must footnote Gary Parrish. He wrote an article. We'll probably link it in the write-up because it was so good. I would adopt that policy as is right now.
Right. No, to another point that Joby made earlier regarding the coaching ban, I think the timing of it is also going to be critical, because if you look at Jim Boeheim's suspension, he missed out on the Georgetown game. He missed out on the St. John's game, which is really huge for the Orange right now, and also missed out on their early set of ACC games. If you compare that to what Larry Brown missed, it's almost night and day.
I don't understand also why, because we don't do this for players. When players are suspended, this is a side issue. But why does Syracuse get to treat Boeheim like an injured player? I don't get that.
That was a comment by the committee chair who said that they will treat Boeheim's absence the same they would treat as an injured player. I think you should treat it the same.
You're like a suspended player.
A suspended player, which you don't give any extra credit because it's your own damn fault you're not on the floor.
Right. Yeah. I agree 100%. I don't understand that logic, but, you know, it is what it is. And maybe that's how the ACC gets their ninth team this year.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't have much sympathy for Oregon State, who had their guy suspended for 4 games because he decided to trip an official.
That was just hilarious.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't think you get any special consideration for not having him those 4 games. I wouldn't give you them. The committee may. The committee may give all those cases some special consideration. But let me go back to David's point, which was actually Gary Parrish's point as well, though. The idea here of anything after July 1st, and we're absolutely making it a rule here that you cannot self-impose a postseason ban, or at least if you do it, I guess you can't prevent a team from saying we are going to decline an NCAA tournament invite if we get it this year, but you get no credit for it. Right. And so Louisville would still be facing another potential postseason ban in the future, so pointless to impose one this year. But the same thing with SMU, didn't get their postseason ban until after July 1st, handed down by the NCAA. Right. They shouldn't have done that. That should have been next year as well, though.
And North Carolina, and it always comes back to North Carolina, they have done this masterfully of slow playing the investigation. I understand why there is not been this. But the fact of the matter is, North Carolina, I mean, this Louisville news came out years after the North Carolina stuff. Right. North Carolina knows they have a chance at a national title this year. They're not messing over their seniors, and we'll see how it comes to play.
But you know what? North Carolina is going to take a long time to get back to normal, whereas Louisville's back to normal 8 weeks from today.
Well, let me ask you, though. If the final decision comes out in North Carolina October 15th this year, 2016, so they've already got their class signed and in school for the year, and the penalty is no postseason next year. They'll be back to normal by the following April, won't they?
Yeah.
SMU is going to be back to normal by April, won't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
Well, it depends on how long Larry Brown stays around.
Well, SMU, Norval, and North Carolina, Norval a little different.
Right, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, Southern Miss is going to be back to normal in no time. In fact, they're not even really.
Missouri wants to get back to something. But but let's move on to the actual games here. And why don't we start in the ACC because we've been talking about Louisville here. Louisville who, just as we begin recording this here around 9:30 on Monday evening, just played a tough game at Duke, but did lose there for their first loss post the ban. I guess the first question we have, Joby, is Duke fully back now?
No, they're not fully back because they're not the same Duke that wins national titles. Duke is a solid tournament team. Okay? For all the people say, oh, Duke shouldn't be in the tournament, sir. No, that's hyperbole the other way. That's swinging the pendulum too far. They are a team that should be wearing white, but not a protected seed, most likely. You know, they've got good talent. I mean, Ingram is a future NBA star. Grayson Allen is solid, but he's not as good as the normal Duke superstar situation. They've got a good team. They proved it tonight. They beat a good Louisville team, you know, and I thought both teams kind of gave it their all, and it wasn't like someone fell into the victory. Duke earned that win tonight. We'll see what Duke does as they host Virginia this Saturday. And they could play their way up the seed line. But where they are is where most prognosticators have them at the 6-7. I think that's about right.
Okay. Well, obviously Duke with their next game this week is they're going to be hosting Virginia this weekend. And I know we always ask you about Virginia, Joby, but David, I want to get your take on this Virginia team also here. Incredible with the way they've been playing the past week, and I think they just missed making the one line on your bracket that you released today.
Me?
Yeah. Either one of you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have. I mean, their paper isn't very two-seed-ish. At least there's some things on there that indicate that they're not. But I don't know. For 39 minutes and 39 seconds against Wake, they look like they have all year on the road, just really not playing well enough to beat non-tournament teams on the road. They had a hell of a last 21 seconds, and that spilled over into they curb-stomped Louisville. They went into Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's probably a top 25 team, in my opinion. They're really, really tough to beat at home. Virginia just went in there and mauled them. Virginia last week had a better week than anybody else has had probably all season. I mean, with those two big road wins, has anybody else looked that impressive on the road in two consecutive games all year? But yeah, I mean, so I think that there are two. The way they're going, and maybe they're just on a hot streak, it wouldn't shock me if they won the ACC.
And the flip side of that is Wake Forest has since folded like a cheap tent. I mean, that would have been their second win in the ACC, but now everyone's using them to springboard to at least one win away from home. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we're going back and editing some early season podcasts where we praised Wake Forest. Yeah. But, what about this North Carolina team, though? Joby, I want to get your take on them. Just how good is this team, or did they get kind of exposed this week with some weaknesses here?
The problem is they don't play defense very well, plain and simple. They don't. They have a good free-flowing style. Johnson's a beast. I mean, you know, they're talent-wise, they're still the best team in the country, talent-wise. When North Carolina plays their best, plays at the top of their game, that means Marcus Paige actually hitting the broadside of a barn. They can beat and would beat anybody, and that includes Oklahoma and really good teams out there. But they don't bring it every time because their defense. And it's what I was saying about Virginia earlier, probably about 3 weeks ago. The problem Virginia has is defense travels, and it's not traveling with Virginia. Right now, defense travels. It's not traveling with North Carolina, as shown to their visit to the Yum Center and their visit in South Bend.
Yeah, and Notre Dame now started to look a lot more impressive. But John, David mentioned this Pitt team and called them a potential top 25 team. I kind of agree with him. I know that others do not and think that they've got some major problems, especially with the lack of a non-conference schedule, put it that way. But what's your feelings on this Pittsburgh team?
I mean, Pittsburgh is still a little bit hard to figure, but I would still give them credit because I believe they're the only team that's won at Notre Dame so far this year. They've also gotten a win at Florida State, which not everyone has been able to do, but I would also give them a little bit of credit for beating Syracuse and St. Joe's.
That was without Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, and Syracuse was awful without him. Which means that they really only have those two wins, Notre Dame and Florida State, and not much of anything else.
The only real bad loss the Panthers have is against NC State, but I'm not getting into that for a second week in a row.
Oh, boy.
And Pittsburgh with a tough week, actually. They're at Miami and at North Carolina this week, so I guess we're going to find out a lot about them.
Yeah, I mean, if they win both of those, they might make the top 25. The other thing about Pittsburgh is they have, like, again, that game against Gonzaga that was canceled, but they followed that up with a real nice win over a St. Joe's team that's right on our bubble. November 17th, St. Joe's beat St. Joe's 84-43.
Pittsburgh beat St. Joe's?
Yep, November 17th. Look at it.
I don't know what you're going to
do. Not necessarily what you're talking about, David.
No, they beat St. Joseph's of Indiana.
St. Joseph's of Indiana.
Over my head.
Okay, David, you got me on that one. Just for that, David, I want to throw one last ACC team at you, and I want you to defend Clemson. And Joby, maybe you want to chip in on this one too.
No.
But after the loss at Vautech, you still have them in your field today, and they're sitting here with what would be a historically low RPI of 83 for an at-large bid.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I know they've got a lot of good at the top of the profile, but they got a lot of bad at the bottom of it.
Yes. Oh, you'd like to know why?
Yeah, I'd like to know why you like them still.
The problem is, Chet, it's a 68-team tournament.
Okay. Joby, is that your reason against Wild?
No. I actually think – I mean, I value – you know, people value things differently. I value quality wins very highly. I know David values road wins very – as a key component, Chad, you look for it to make sure people haven't suffered the bad losses, which you're referring to with Clemson with their great Minnesota, Massachusetts, Virginia Tech triple. But Clemson's, the top of their resume isn't just good, it's outstanding. I mean, there are only about three or four teams that have more quality wins in the entire country.
But only one of them on the road and at Syracuse again without Boeheim.
Yeah. It's still a win on the road against – even without Boeheim, you know, it's still a nice quality road win. That's what Clemson needs. They need some more road wins to be solidly in the field. They're not solidly in the field thanks to the Virginia Tech loss.
Yeah, they needed that win. Oh, my God. And Virginia Tech, there's nothing special about them, but that's just it. I don't know if the win would have helped or if the loss would have hurt. Basically, what that loss says is that they can beat – nationally ranked teams at home, but they can't beat sub-NIT teams on the road. And that's just not – you can't – we see it all the time, and we see it correctly. There's nothing like college basketball. The familiarity with the venue, the floor, the rims, the shooting backgrounds and is one huge advantage, and the other is the atmosphere of the fans. It's so hard to win on the road in college basketball, and that's what you have to do to make the tournament. Just beating good teams at home is not going to get you there.
But if you look at how Clemson played earlier in the year, they weren't as familiar with the arena in Greenville.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's interesting is this isn't Little John Arena for Clemson. They're playing all their games not fan-wise, but all the other components on a neutral site in a lot.
At the Good Comfort Wellness Center, yep. Bon Secours. Yeah. Let's move over to the Big East, John, and I want to turn to you on this because you're our Big East guy here. And we have a new number one team in the nation, both the AP and the coaches poll for the first time in program history. Villanova Wildcats are the number one team in the nation. I don't think any of us agree that they are the best team right now, but obviously the coaches in the writers have voted too. How good is this Villanova team?
I think we have to reiterate the lesson that Villanova is the hottest team in the country, if not not necessarily the best team. But certainly when they are hitting from outside, They are one of the most dangerous teams in the country, as my own Xavier team can attest. But as we saw in the tournament last year, Villanova is not going to be hitting every night, and they're going to be a dangerous team for people in their pools. But looking ahead, Villanova and Xavier, could both teams still be in the top five, if not even higher, when they meet at Cintas in a couple weeks?
Well, yeah, I mean, Villanova doesn't have much of a schedule other than a road test at Big Five rival Temple in a non-conference game February 17th.
Where is that? I know it says it's at Temple, but is that the Palestra, or is it at...
It's at Leocoris.
Okay.
Yeah, that's at Leocoris. But David, the team that may be heading in the wrong direction here in the Big East is Providence, although they did have the Ben Bentel injury there to deal with.
Well, yeah, Providence is schizophrenic, and you see a team like this every now and then. They lose badly at DePaul, and that followed up a tremendous win at Villanova. So what do you do with a team like this? When they're on, they're as good as anybody. They're a lot of fun to watch. Bentel's fun. They've got one of the best players in the country. But right now, they've lost three of their last four. Now, granted, Xavier's really good, but DePaul really isn't. And I was just impressed with Nova, how they went into the dunk, and they jumped all over them. And this atmosphere was rowdy. I think it's one of the biggest home games Providence has had, certainly since the Big East developed its curtain format, and maybe even years and years before that. And Nova just took them apart. Their next two games, they're at Marquette. They'll probably win that one. Then they come home to Georgetown. Georgetown really struggling on the road this year. They'll lose that one. Then they go to Xavier. They'll probably win that one.
Yeah, that's about it. Now, I read an interesting – I'm kind of upset that our colleague Lee Delvecchio wasn't here, because I was reading a column by one of his favorite writers, John Rothstein, today, who said that at the moment the Big East is a two-team league and anybody else is on the bubble. Joby, is that how bad the rest of the Big East is after Xavier, Villanova, or is he a little off base?
He mentioned Providence. Providence is solidly in. I don't know.
Seen Hall also.
And remember, I was the one last Thursday who had them lower than most, and I still have them solidly in. Seton Hall's got a nice little resume. They're inside the bubble, I think, clearly right now. Are they safe for good? No, because if they go out and make some bad losses at the bottom of the Big East, they're in trouble. But if they take care of business, Seton Hall's likely going to be punching their tournament ticket.
But that's the thing, Joby. Everyone's waiting for them to melt down, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet. Don't say yet. This is a different Seton Hall team. Right. I mean,
Kevin Willard.
They've been more consistent than Providence. You know, I mean, to put it in perspective. And the rest, everybody else is an NIT team, but they're NIT teams. They're not CBI teams.
Right. Yeah.
So, Seton Hall actually got their best crowd of the year for their Saturday night game against Georgetown, which they drew over 9,000. That was actually, I think, 1,000 more than they drew for the Villanova game, which was midweek.
Didn't know that.
So their fans are starting to believe in them.
Let's move over to the Big 12. And John, in our notes today, you actually asked this question. I want to ask it directly to you. Was the loss to Oklahoma State enough to justify Oklahoma no longer being the number one team of the nation, according to the voters?
I think you meant Kansas State, not Oklahoma State. Or did I type in Oklahoma State?
You typed in Oklahoma State. I read your notes, but I meant to say Kansas State as well, and I knew that. But that's what I get from reading the notes verbatim, so go ahead.
Yeah, what happened a couple weeks ago was they lost to Iowa State, and everyone's like, oh, they lost to Iowa State. They need to move down by default. But what they did was they also followed that up with a win at Baylor, which at the time you're still talking about playing in two of the top five venues in Big 12 play. Getting a win at one of them is going to be huge. Compare that to a team like North Carolina, who had two chances for quality wins away from home and got neither. But for getting back to Oklahoma, I mean, you can't expect them to win every single game, but they would have been better off losing to LSU and beating Kansas State on the road, because it wouldn't have hurt them as much in the conference standings, and it would have definitely helped the media in terms of picking LSU.
And actually, as we record this, Oklahoma is now trailing at home to Texas, so that may justify them not being the number one team in the nation anymore.
Yeah, and if they lose this game, they shouldn't be. I've been pounding Oklahoma's drum all year long. I might have to concede that they're not the best team, or at least they haven't played like it the last couple weeks, if they drop this one to Texas. Now, having said that,
I want you to go right there and talk about exactly where you're going, so go for it.
How improved? Is there a team Iowa and Texas, and I know we're going to get to Iowa. Iowa started things off with losing an exhibition game, and then they didn't do so well in the Advocate Classic, but Texas also, did not look that good at the beginning of the year, starting off, I think, was it 2-3 or 2-4 or something, but lately, good God, how is this the most improved team from where they were when the season started till now? I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about the Advocare Invitational being an 18 group of death. Let's not forget what happened down in Atlanta, see there, with the exception of Charlotte. You look at what Syracuse was able to do by winning that tournament against Texas A&M. Gonzaga actually salvaged part of their season with wins against Washington and also UConn.
Yeah.
On the other end, also right now in the Big 12, as we actually look at the standings today, Joby, West Virginia is now your first-place team.
Remember, they came within inches of having yet another great win on their resume, too.
And I think you're not talking about
the Kansas-Oklahoma double. Very close, you know. So, West Virginia, Huggy got his team together. And it was, I think he really took it over at that Virginia game where he made some substitution decisions that basically said, hey, if you're not going to play my way, I'm going to sit you, this game be damned.
And at least now, go ahead.
We saw that in the Florida game also, though. Didn't he say that's somebody for that game?
Yes. I mean, he's shaping this team and they're responding. And hey, they got their doors blown out against the Gators, as we know. Wow. So it's not like everything's been peaches and cream lately, but this is a good team. The pressing of West Virginia has been outstanding so far. They really ratcheted up. They're a fun team in that regard. If Williams can get the game inside, they are really someone to watch out for. But it's just when you look at this whole conference we're talking about, there are so many teams that are fighting for 1 and 2 seeds out of this thing. It is kind of an exciting thing to watch.
Yeah, at least West Virginia was smart enough not to poke the rattlesnake in conference play.
We have not mentioned Kansas or Iowa State yet. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, David, I want to turn to you. A couple of big games coming up this week, actually. West Virginia at Kansas, and, of course, the Kansas-Oklahoma rematch Saturday afternoon. That's just what we have in this Big 12, though, isn't it? Every week we seem to have 3 or 4 huge games like this.
Yeah, you do. And if you believe, if iron sharpens iron, how sharp are these teams going to be in the NCAA tournament? You look at the Big 12 tournament, you're looking at something that's more difficult than most regionals because, the regionals in the NCAA tournament, they only have one number one seed, one number two seed, one number three seed. Mm-hmm. We might have 5, 6 teams that are 3 seeds or better in this tournament going into – where is it this year? Is it Kansas City?
It's in Kansas City again,
Another case like last year where Iowa State actually loses their first round game because they had used up all their bullets in the Big 12 tournament.
And that's do we see a repeat? And we'll get to this later. Do we see a repeat in March from last year? Because last year it was the same thing. And will we see a repeat?
I just want to throw one other team out here. We discussed this before we went on the air, actually, but with that home win over Oklahoma, Kansas State has a very interesting profile. Now, I am the number one critic of Bruce Weber probably in the entire world at the moment, but when I look at the resume, as Joby mentioned, one of the things I always look at is what bad losses did you have? And, yes, Kansas State is sitting here with 9 losses right now. Every single one of them was to an RPI top 25 team. Your worst loss was a loss at Baylor. Now, they obviously have to do something on the good side. Also, they're going to get the chances, though. Baylor home, Texas home, Kansas home, at Iowa State left. along with three more winnable road games for your category, David, at Oklahoma State, at TCU, at Texas Tech.
They better get those three. I mean, they only have one true road win right now. That is statistically or categorically very, very low. I don't think anybody's ever gotten in with only one. They better win those three. Those are non-tournament teams. They got to beat them.
But, again, I mean, when you put aside those – I mean, other than a road game at Iowa State, every game remaining is either those three games or a home game.
Yeah.
I would say that they're not out of it yet, and if they can put together some of these wins, I think they're going to get some serious consideration. That's my Kansas City argument.
And Georgia's not the best place in the world to get a road win either.
Yeah. They have the opportunity. They have the same opportunity that, and we'll get to this team later, Oregon State, that with the Clemson team we've already mentioned, teams that were quasi-buried, but they have opportunities because of the conferences they play in.
Right.
See if Kansas State can accomplish that. I don't think they will. But, yes, if they accomplish what has been laid out in front by you, Chad, of course we will consider them, and the tournament committee will consider them.
Let's turn to the number two team in the nation, according to both polls right now. And David, I know you strongly agree with this, that they are the second best team in the country. Of course, I'm talking about Maryland.
Oh, yes. I've been writing everybody saying, how can you not be voting for Maryland? Okay, Maryland has a neutral floor win over UConn, who is not going to be wearing white. The next team that they beat that's wearing white away from home in the round of 64 will be their first. They have not even – it's one thing. They have road wins, but, you know, they had to kind of sweat one out at Northwestern. They barely beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin. Now, Whiskey might play their way in. I know they're playing better, but they're not a protected seed. Maryland goes up there and barely wins. They don't beat Michigan. Michigan's not a protected seed. They don't win at Michigan State. No real harm there. They have to sweat out Ohio State. They have to sweat out Nebraska on the road. These aren't even tournament teams, and they're struggling to beat them. And again, I think Maryland is good enough to beat good teams when they're familiar with the venue and when the atmosphere favors them and suffocates the opponent. They have not proven they can do that without those two advantages, and they sure as hell haven't proven they can do it when those two things are going against them instead of for them. This isn't the second-best team. They're not even the second-best team in the Big Ten. What a ludicrous ranking, but we all know why it happened because we all know how the polls work. How hot are they? Yeah, I mean, clearly sweating out Nebraska and Ohio State has really impressed these voters.
Joby, who is the best team in the Big Ten?
Really? Iowa. My gosh, I love Iowa. And probably if this result that we're looking at with Texas still up on Oklahoma, I can make a very strong argument that Iowa is the number one overall.
And this is a team that lost an exhibition game to, who was it, some Iowa school.
But, yeah, see, and they're on fire lately. They've, you know, the sweep of Michigan State. I mean, this team, that the only loss they've had is to Maryland. That's why I think I actually would have Maryland now as a protected seed. That's something I would not have said 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I really like this Iowa team. McCaffrey's been outstanding. They have more wins than anybody else in the country except one of teams against the field. I know I sound like a broken record citing that stat, but that impresses the hell out of me.
Well, how about this for Maryland? In order to get to the Sweet 16, they're going to have to beat a team away from home that's far better than anyone they've beaten away from home to date. Yet they're ranked number two. That's absurd.
You don't think they'll have to play such a team in the round of 32, possibly in Brooklyn?
Possibly.
Yeah. John, let me ask you about another Big Ten team here. We saw one of the most surprising results of the weekend. Indiana went and lost at Penn State, and David's already laughing.
Dockage can sure pick them.
Right after Dan Dockage said they were the best team in the Big Ten, they now have a Penn State loss, a UNLV loss, a Wake Forest loss. They beat Notre Dame. They won at Michigan, and that's it. I think an argument makes that Indiana is closer to being out of the field than they are to being anywhere near the best team in the Big Ten.
Indiana, this is why you cannot have nice things. Yeah. And I will say the same thing about Michigan later. I mean, we also have to look at Indiana. They're going to have a very critical week coming up now.
Huge week, yeah.
They get Iowa coming to Assembly Hall, and then right after that they have to go to Michigan State. So they could not afford to piss away the Penn State game on the road.
I don't think they get either of these. I think Iowa goes in there and mops them up. God.
What about the other team that's kind of slipping here a bit, David? How about this Michigan team? Are you as concerned about that with, you know, not even being competitive at home against Indiana or Michigan State?
I like how you say they're slipping a bit. A bit. You know, 9 minutes without a point, just a bit of a slip. That's what that was, just a little bit of a slip. Yes, I think you need to be very concerned. I don't think they're going to miss the field, but really at no point this season, I don't think, has Michigan looked like a team that's capable of beating somebody in the round of 64. Who have they beaten of that caliber? Oh, Nebraska.
Maryland.
Excuse me.
Yeah, what's amazing is they beat
Maryland. There you go. Maryland did at home.
That's another indictment on the Terrapins right there, that they couldn't take advantage of the opportunity at Michigan right now.
Yeah.
Joby, let's switch over to the Pac-12 right now, and I want to bring up a question here.
One final thought on the Big Ten, just real quick. Tim Miles has Nebraska in a situation to where if they win the Big Ten tournament, they'll go to the NCAA.
Okay, someone mute the puppet and let's. Joby. Mm-hmm. The Oregon Ducks.
I love this team.
I have not seen anybody have them on the one line quite yet. I think there's a case they belong up there, especially if Oklahoma loses tonight.
Yes. I mean, Oklahoma's coming back a little. We'll see. But, oh, my gosh, they are – I really like this team. We talked about the Pac-12 being this mess, but – and I talked about it in a mathematical sense of – well, you're just going to get good wins because every team is beating up on each other, and you've got, you know, eight really good teams, and so you never get a bad loss unless it's Wazoo, you know, or the Curtain of Distraction. Oregon has taken these tough teams, which the Pac-12 is deep, 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 and said, you know what, forget that. We're going to step out. We're going to win this thing, and they've done it by pure – by just strength. I mean, the Utah win was nice recently. I got to watch that full hand, you know, because it was the only game on, except for this other football game that was later.
Yeah.
But Oregon's the real deal. I will lay that down. And if Oregon can afford even a loss or two on its way, as long as they win the Pac-12 regular season and if they do the double, I think they're one seed.
And I have a dangerous road trip coming up this week at the Bay Area. You look at schools like Stanford and Cal who really need signature wins, and Oregon is going to be their best shot at it this year.
Cal needs road wins, too. They only got one.
I think the most amazing stat when I look at Oregon's profiles, when I scroll down to look at RPI 150-plus games, they only played four of them, and they won all four of them. But what that equates to?
You're impressed that they beat four.
I'm impressed by what that equates to, which is the number one strength of schedule in the country. That's what that means. Mm-hmm. When you've played everybody in the top 150, really, all but five of their games have been top 100 games.
And that's what impresses you: the wins over Jackson, Vates State, Savannah State, Arkansas State.
Yes, David.
That's very easily impressed. I'm not sure what.
You're playing games even around 120. On the road, for instance, against a Virginia Tech, who has now beaten two teams I have in my field at their home, you know, in Virginia. Oregon's doing it, and that's good for Oregon, you know.
Oregon actually has the number two overall strength of schedule in the country. Guess who's number one? And this was a team I was chastised for mentioning last week. The Stanford Cardinal.
Stanford's up there. It's actually really close if you look at the ratings. It's neck and neck between the two of them for the top strength of schedule.
But the big difference is Oregon is winning their games, but the Cardinal or not.
No, they're not. The other team that I think we want to discuss from the Pac-12 is the other Oregon team. And Oregon State, while they still haven't done it on the road, has done a ton of stuff at home, including a great week with Utah and Colorado this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've played their way into a situation where the opportunity is there. Stanford, California, Oregon. I think they need two of those.
Well, five out of seven remaining games all on the road, so yeah. Really.
I mean, well, that's a good point. I mean, they need – and they're all tough. Again, it was home-heavy early, five out of their last seven. How many of those do they need to win? To get inside the bubble. They only have two true road wins. They need more than that. I think they need at least three more to feel safe. I think if they win three of those and then hold serve at home, they're good. I think they're in. I think that's enough to get them in.
Mm-hmm. Joby, one other team I want to mention, the Pac-12 here, Cal, who we mentioned very briefly, one true road win, yet stockpiling the top 100 wins with eight of them already. I think you had this team in. I think you had them fairly comfortably in.
I did. I mean, comfortably. They're not wearing white, but they're not on the bubble. They're
well,
not
for. I have them wearing white in the NIT.
They're piling up, and you hit it. They're getting high value quality wins. They do need to win some more on the road if they want to actually move up the bracket. But as far as being in or not, they're beating teams that are in the field. They've beaten, I think, four or five that I would have in my field, four. And that's pretty solid. They need to do more. Yes, they need to do more on the road. But
one true road win. If they do not get both of these and get it at least up to three and then probably win a game in the Pac-12, if they lose at Wazoo and Arizona State, I think they're out,
Jones. Yeah, and that changes their profile 100% because they've to date pretty much avoided Chad's big thing is they don't have a lot of bad losses, per se.
Spoiler alert, Joby is including St. Mary's in his field right now.
I guess, yeah.
John, let's move on, and I want to move over to the SEC here, actually, and maybe one of the most another pretty startling score from this past weekend, and a huge win for the team was South Carolina, Angry Frank going and winning at Texas A&M. I did not think the South Carolina team was that good. I just thought they had a bloated record until what they did this weekend. What was your thoughts about the South Carolina team now with that win on their profile?
It's not the final score that was startling, but when you consider they were up eight with about 2 minutes to play and did just about everything to throw that game away, they did show quite a bit of resilience in holding on to win at A&M, which was the first time the Aggies had lost at home. Now the Gamecocks are facing a very critical stretch with LSU coming into Columbia, followed by Kentucky. I mean, if they win those two, they are firmly in the driver's seat in the SEC right now, but those are two big hurdles to overcome.
Well, if you want to talk about the driver's seat, right now, if you look at the standings, the first place team is LSU. And David, you had LSU in your field this week after beating Auburn and Mississippi State.
Yes.
But they are in first place. So is that why you had them in the field?
No, I had them in the field because it's a 68-team tournament. So you have to include teams like Clemson and LSU that otherwise shouldn't be there. And really, it's practically a 70-team tournament since two of the teams that would be in it aren't going to be in it. So
three.
I don't really particularly like LSU. I think that they've
three,
been playing,
David.
What's that?
Three teams.
Three, yeah.
Who's three.
Oh, of course.
The Lopes.
The Lopes.
Flavor.
I am sorry about that.
Dad, David had merely forgotten Larry Brown and the Mustangs, not the Lopes.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, SMU. Yes. Yeah, I forgot about them. Well, plus I'm assuming we're going to get the waiver for the Lopes.
Okay.
So, but you know they've won four of their last five. The one loss was a close game to Oklahoma. They're playing better. I think they go to South Carolina. They have A&M at home. They go to Arkansas, not a tournament team, but a home court hero. They're going to get their chances to land inside this bubble. Right now, they're squarely on it. I think they get there the way they've been playing. I do think they'll end up in it. I don't think they'll do much once they get in, but I do think they'll get in.
Joby, do you think the fact that they have Ben Simmons on the team might push them in, even though they may not deserve to be in, if the committee can find a way to get them in the field?
You know what? We'd like to say no, but yeah. I think it's a tiebreaker. Like, for instance, you know, David had him as one of his last team in. Right now, they are the last team in my field. If you can't, they are, but I'm giving them the automatic SEC as the SEC leader right now. So it's like tough, you know, in that regard. LSU will get a chance, as David laid out, to play their way in or play their way out. If they win the regular season or even get a piece of the regular season title in the SEC, I think they're going to be in. But they're going to have to earn, as you laid out with that schedule, they're going to have to earn that to get that designation.
I don't think Ben Simmons really helps them. I really don't. But I think Joe Oliva helps them. Joe Oliva is LSU's athletic director. Joe Oliva is on the selection committee.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of what I was hitting at for. Yeah.
John, we've gotten this far about talking SEC. We have not mentioned the word Kentucky yet, or at least mentioned Kentucky's schedule yet. But actually, a huge home win, albeit, over Florida, dominating them this weekend. Although it's now probably only their third win over a team that's squarely in the field also. Meanwhile, you've got five losses to teams that are not going to be in this field unless we say that LSU is going to be in there. Has Kentucky righted the ship with this win after the Tennessee loss? Are they still in trouble because they can't seem to win on the road? What is your thought on this Kentucky team?
I would say they've bailed the water out of their ship right now. I mean, that loss to Tennessee was pretty damaging. But to get back to your other point,
huge lead to in the game too, yeah. And then they fell apart.
If they weren't named Kentucky, we probably would be skewering them simply for the fact that they're not able to beat tournament teams. I mean, UCLA, Ohio State, Auburn, Tennessee, ordinarily those would not be damaging losses, but this is not your typical season.
David, only two true road wins.
Yeah, it's a weak profile. They have done some stuff on a neutral floor, namely beat Duke and beat South Florida. Is that UConn's big rival? And but that's really the paper here is pretty weak. They looked amazing at Kansas as well as anybody's played all year, and then they followed that up by falling apart at Tennessee. They lost to a non-tournament team, and they absolutely crumbled in the loss. I mean, I just don't you never want to write them off just yet, as talented as they are, but as of now, they've really shown no indication that they're going anywhere.
How can you write them off? Because the real Joe Lunardi now has them as a protected seed in his weekly brackets.
Well, we're not going – I'm not touching that. But Joby, the thing that would do is if you have this Kentucky team suddenly fall to a 7 or an 8 seed, what are you doing – to that one seed or the two seed that matches up with them. Isn't that a scary matchup?
That's a very – I mean, you're hitting on the head because we've seen this movie before. And, I mean, Kentucky was an 8 seed, makes it all the way to the championship game. Who's to say they couldn't do it again? They have the talent there, but it is inconsistent. We see it explode against Florida and then implode against Tennessee just in the last week, as you guys pointed out. Boy, I would not want – want to be that Big 12 team, you know, du jour that gets, you know, labeled with them. It's not, you know, I guess Kansas should feel good because they won't be, most likely.
They'll probably avoid also assuming that Villanova Xavier is not going to
East will go out early again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't want to see my Virginia team play that team, you know, I mean.
Would you rather see him play Michigan State for a third straight year?
I think you'd take Kentucky over Michigan State.
let's turn briefly over to the American, where Cincinnati had another, I don't know what you want to call it, David. at Memphis. Maybe not as bad as what Temple did at East Carolina, but close to it.
Yes, this is what's known in the business as a bedwetting. They pissed all over the bed, and here they are with a very, very fringe tournament profile, very close to the bubble, and a very small margin for error because there just isn't anybody. I mean, as impressed as the committee is when you go to UCF and East Carolina and Houston and win, there just really isn't anything left here other than maybe SMU at home.
And UConn at home.
Yeah.
Like this, you have to wonder, is it a good thing or a bad thing that Larry Davis is still the associate head coach at UC?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they seem to be a lot better at this time last year when he was running the ship and Cronin was sitting out because of his health issues.
Is this kind of surprise? I was not expecting much out of Cincinnati coming into the year, but after seeing them play early on and how well they shot the ball, because their shooting is what – I mean, they just couldn't hit water throwing the ball into the ocean in previous years. And even early in the year when they had the close loss to Butler and the close loss to Iowa State, those are heartbreaking, but they're not really alarming. But losing it, I mean, losing some of the games they've lost, Temple twice, Memphis, it's just, are you kind of shocked that this team, because I thought they were going to roll over this conference. I really did.
I'm shocked by it. I really thought this was the best team in the conference, and right now they can't afford another bad loss, or they better win the conference tournament.
Right.
And any loss they get, save SMU, et cetera, is a bad loss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. You laid it out.
Let me discuss one other team here in the American. John, I want to throw this to you because you raised it in today's notes, and I think we are going to read the right team name this time. Is Tulsa worth discussing? And maybe it's a question we need to save for the end of the week because they're at SMU and at UConn this week, but are they worth discussing? Is there something here that you're seeing?
I think they're worth discussing if we're talking about the auto bid in the American. I still find it hard to believe that the automatic bid is not going to go through either Connecticut or Cincinnati or the Temple Owls, which everyone seems to want to write off, but Temple won't let us.
I will not write off Temple if they win the automatic bid, John. I promise you that.
Temple's got – I mean, if Temple takes down Nova, it changes everything.
Yeah, and again, with Tulsa, like I said, they're at SMU and at UConn this week. They win those two games, Cincinnati at home, and the next game after that, they win those three. I'll talk Tulsa at that point.
Yeah. I remember Tulsa's win. They still had to face a little Van Fleet when they beat Wichita State. I know he got hurt in there, but – yeah, that's still a legit win in my book.
Atlantic 10, Joby, we've got Dayton up on top here, actually tied with VCU now. How good is this Dayton team?
They're Archie Miller's best team, and it's a little deeper than he's normally had, in my opinion. Depth we didn't think they had at the beginning of the year, I might add. This is a pretty team. It's a fun team to watch, actually, if you like defense, which I do. And they also, their paper is surprisingly good because they played well in the preseason. They did their job in the preseason. This Dayton team, now that VCU did their little slip, and VCU is still a solid squad.
Yeah.
Now we're going to see Dayton, I think, take over the regular season command in this conference, as I expected them to do from word go.
Dayton teams without depth like last year were scary enough, but let's see what they do this year with an 8 or 9 man rotation.
Yeah, and their play in the paint has gotten a lot better too. This is kind of amazing to think about. Xavier blew them out early in the year, and I don't know how much of a difference it would have made, but they really weren't at full strength. Other than that, they have a 2-point loss to Chattanooga, and was it overtime that LaSalle got him, or did that game end in regulation?
And in regulation, it was last second. They actually led most of the game last second win by LaSalle.
Right. That is a bad loss, and I'm not defending
it. That's a bad loss.
Yeah, it was a toe stub. It blew up in their face. But essentially, they are 7 points away from having just one loss And that would be to a really good Xavier team when they weren't full strength. And it isn't – I know their schedule hasn't been the best, but they have blown through it the way you would expect a top 15 team to blow through a schedule like this. They win in the St. Bonaventure and won. They win in the Fordham and won handily. Fordham's played well at home this year. They blitzed St. Louis. They blitzed George Mason. I mean – I know that these aren't good teams, but Dayton is running away from them the way you would expect a top 15 team to do it. I think Dayton's a top 15 team.
And Dayton beat my number one overall seed if Oklahoma loses tonight. Let's not forget that.
Couple other teams real briefly here. George Washington obviously had that huge win over VCU, putting them squarely back, stopping the bleeding and putting them squarely back in tournament talk, I think. At this point, but really...
Oh, yeah, they did! Show me, they beat Iowa. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, I mean...
okay.
What the hell is Joby talking about?
We've had this St. Joe's team in our field for quite a while now. They did suffer the loss to St. Bonaventure this past week, and suddenly their profile, they have not beaten anybody in the field. Do you think the St. Joe's team is still a tournament team?
I think they're much closer to the first four right now, but they're also going to be pushing one of David's criteria to the test now, because really their 10-1 record away from home is all they really have. I mean, if you look at the quality of their losses, one was against Florida on a neutral field. The other three losses were at home against Villanova and VCU, which were forgivable, but losing to St. Bonaventure, that's not as forgivable in terms of the at-large picture. I know it's not bad by A-10 standards, but we're talking about NCAA standards here.
Yeah, and they lost at home. And did you watch that game? It was eye-gougingly bad. It was so alarming. It's like, is this the same St. Joe's team that we've watched all season? I mean, they look drunk.
They're the Providence of the A-10.
I mean, they've got GW on the road this week. They're kind of home game against Dayton next week. I think they need to win both of those because that's their only chances before the A-10 tournament to have wins against the field. And you need wins against the field to get in, don't you? Even Arkansas Little Rock has wins against the field. Even Monmouth has wins against the field.
Monmouth has two, possibly three, depending on how you view the bubble at UCLA.
There are some historical cases. I think Nevada got in one year when they had, Fizikas without any top 50 wins, and they didn't beat anybody in the field other than New Mexico State, who won the conference tournament. I want to say George Washington got in without a win against the field. It's recommended that you beat teams that make the field. I've read that somewhere before. I think I heard a committee member say they like it if you beat at least one or two top 50 teams. But, yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of decent NIT-caliber wins here, but no solid wins. I agree with Chad. If they don't want to be sweating, they need wins.
Maybe beat Princeton, though. That's all you need, right?
Yeah.
Princeton and at Temple.
But Princeton is not on top of the Ivy right now.
Actually,
that's a good segue, because I wanted to mention the Ivy League real briefly here. There are four teams left in the nation that are undefeated within their conference. Yale in the Ivy League is one of them. Stony Brook, Stephen F. Austin, and San Diego State.
Yep.
This Aztecs team, we've obviously the best team in the Mountain West, I think, by far here. I don't think anyone would argue with that. But I guess the question with them is, have they done enough that if they slip up in the Mountain West tournament, they can get a bid now?
If they win all the rest of their regular season games, I think so. They've decided to make it exciting. Here they are at home taking on non-tournament teams. they need a Herculean comeback to get Colorado State. And this weekend against New Mexico, did anyone watch the end of that? They were down 5 with about 20 seconds to go, not quite awaking, because they had the ball. They hit a 3 to cut the lead to 2, and then New Mexico inbounds the ball, and then mysteriously and inexplicably, somehow it's a turnover, and it's San Diego State's ball. They get it back. They score. They force overtime. They win in overtime. The officials, or the Mountain West Conference, has since acknowledged that it was the incorrect call and that it never should have been a turnover. But on paper, they got the win anyway. I can't – to answer your question, on paper, I guess a one-point win is as good as an 80. But here I am talking about how much better they looked and how they're running over the conference, and they have to sweat out – these past two games at home, and really, had the correct call been made, they don't win that game against New Mexico.
Yeah, Xavier, for example, did not need any close calls, but a win is a win, however you can get it.
Yeah.
Over the West Coast Conference, Joby, St. Mary's lost at BYU, really only one good road test left, and that's the game at Gonzaga. Is that now a must win for them?
It probably is. I mean, they're right on the bubble. I think the WCC can produce two teams, but almost everything else, you know, BYU has to go away now. they've been playing spoiler a little bit this year. But BYU's also an NIT, you know, it's not an embarrassing loss by any stretch. St. Mary's and Gonzaga, in order to make the tournament, kind of have to make runs throughout the rest of the year. If St. Mary's cannot win at the Zags, I think St. Mary's has probably got to run all the way, including getting a Zags win in the conference tournament and being the auto.
Yeah, if they beat the Zags in the conference tournament, it'll be the finals.
Yeah, exactly. Likewise, if the Zags lose, they then have to become the auto. I think the loser has to become the auto. The winner, I think, can be an at-large.
Well, David, can the Zags get the at-large? They have slightly better things they've done on their profile, and they've gotten wins away from home, albeit neutral court wins. They have a huge game this weekend, though, at SMU. Non-conference game. If they win that one, can they lose that St. Mary's game and still get in?
Yeah, I think so. Unlike St. Mary's, they actually gave themselves chances and actually took advantage of some of them. And these are decent, but not great. UConn away from home, pretty good. Washington away from home, pretty good. Granted, that's pretty much the only good on here, but it's a weak bubble. But you add SMU to that, that's better than anything else on their profile. I don't think anybody on the bubble will have a win like that unless you get Kentucky or A&M or something like that along the line. If they win out, they don't need to win the West Coast tournament. What's that?
Yeah, the return game is going
to
be
all the way to the bubble. They'll have that Villanova win the hangar.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Last but not least, one more team. John Lindbergh here on them. Wichita State suffered a loss over the weekend at Illinois State, a surprising loss.
Yeah.
Are they in any trouble now, in your opinion, or is that just, you know, we're just going to chalk that one up and keep going here as long as they keep rolling over the rest of this conference? And when their non-conference game actually coming up next Monday night, they're playing their makeup game against New Mexico State as well.
Considering they've already swept Southern Illinois and swept Evansville and now have a split with Illinois State, their remaining games are going to be against the Minnows of the Missouri Valley, so losing another regular season game is going to be pretty bad and would pretty much force the Shockers to win the conference tournament.
Let's say they lose at Indiana State. The Trees are always tough to beat on the road. You think that would knock them out of and make them have to win the automatic bid?
The Trees are around 500 right now, so I'm not going to make much of a distinction if it's Indiana State or whether it's going to be Drake. But to get back to my point, if you look at how the Missouri Valley bracket is shaking up right now, they would be slated to face Southern Illinois in the semifinals and then either Evansville or Illinois State. But there's going to be a lot more urgency for them to win in St. Louis than there has been the past 2 years for them.
David, do you agree with that?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, actually, I think they can afford to drop one more, but it would be advisable not to. What was so alarming about this Illinois State game was that they had, I think, a 15-16-point lead in the second half. Illinois State switched to a zone, and Wichita could not adjust. And it was just like watching, you know, glasses fall off and crash one after another. I mean, it was so alarming how crippled they were against something that didn't seem like should have been that hard for them to adjust to. Anyway.
Well, I guess on that note, that covers all the teams that we want to get to tonight, unless anyone has any other teams they want to specifically bring up. But I want to run through each of you on any final thoughts and let you give it a shot to do that right now. And Joby, let me start with you.
Well, let's keep on looking. We mentioned it before. Let's look at these Oregon States, these Clemsons, these Kansas States, teams that can play their way because they have the schedule still in front of them, have the chance to collect quality wins. I have a feeling there will be some team out there, probably from one of the big three conferences of this year, the ACC, Pac-12, and Big 12, that we aren't really focusing on, that will go on a tear and we go, whoa, where did they come from? Wouldn't be surprised at all. And whether it be someone from out of the field in or someone on our bubble presently, that now we're all of a sudden talking about wearing white or even a protected seat.
John, your thoughts?
With Xavier's win on Saturday, that put them at 9-2 in the Big East. That now makes 34 consecutive years in which they have finished at least 500 or above in conference play. You have to go back to the 1981-82 season in what was then the Midwestern City Conference to look at the last time they actually had a losing record in conference play. No other program in the country can match that consistency, whoa, not even Kansas.
Wow. David. Yeah.
Two things. First, it's kind of disappointing when you see like tournament caliber teams ineligible because it weakens the bubble even more. I'm kind of holding my nose at the bottom of it, but at the same time, hopefully it opens the door for Chattanooga, Little Rock, teams Valpo, if they slip up in their conference tournaments, because I always kind of hate to see a team, even a Stony Brook, who I don't think is anywhere near the bubble, but Akron, another one. Teams that really are good, that have good regular seasons, but because of one or two bad days in a conference tournament, aren't able to get inside the bubble. That's the first thing. The second thing, I saw one of the coolest things that I've seen in a long time, and that was at the Florida Gulf Coast game. This was a bitter rival of Mercer's in the Atlantic Sun when Mercer was still in there. The students had the sign that said their hearts were with Mercer. And it kind of like took me back that they would do that. First of all, that students would take it upon themselves to do that. And secondly, that they, despite the rivalry, still had them in mind after what happened last week, that big tragedy. So I just thought that was really, really – I wasn't expecting it. And it kind of touched me when I saw it.
Yeah, I actually saw that as well, and it really I was just as astounded by it as you were, and really just showing their hearts for the awful, awful tragedy there at Mercer. But on that note, on behalf of John Slica, Joby Fortson, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. I want to thank you again for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.